to order. Shab, come on up. We're ready for you.
Good afternoon. How is everybody today?
Hi, Shab.
Enjoyed your lunch. Unusual time frame for me. I'm glad to be here, though. Thanks for making time.
By the way, tell us what Sparky the dog is about.
Oh, okay. you've seen a Smokey Bear costume.
See, I told you.
So Sparky dog is the same idea as Smokey Bear. It's just Smokey Bear is very specific to wildland fire prevention. Sparky dog is more about structural fire prevention, installing smoke detectors, meeting with the kids, talking about getting out of their home safely, having escape plans, dialing 911, stop, drop, and roll. All those kinds of messages that we provide for the school kids, school-age kids. We have one of our firefighters work with a Sparky dog costume, and that message is well-received. And then on top of that, we'll also use Sparky dog for, public events, like our annual open house at the Pinedale Fire Station, and doing those kind of things where we interact with the community and the public and try to engage with the children and provide the handouts and the brochures and the literature and those kind of things we do. It's just an opportunity to be able to meet with the kids and interact with them.
How long have you been doing this?
Sparky dog?
Yeah.
Just now. We just now started getting
it. Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought maybe something I'd been missing.
Oh, no,
been doing it a while.
Yeah, we had included some money in our fire prevention budget this year to try to start working towards that next year.
Okay, well, thank you for that explanation.
Sure, that was kind of a strange expenditure, huh?
Didn't mean to interrupt your program.
Glad to answer. Thanks for asking, actually. All right, so this is my monthly report. I'll be brief. I'm always happy to answer for any additional questions as you have it, but you can read the information that's in front of you. Essentially, right now, I'm working on budget with preparing for next year's budget. We're working with Todd Hurd and with maintenance to identify and correct a couple of the issues that we have in our fire stations. That's continuing ongoing. One thing I want to make note of is that as of right now, all outstanding payments for all wildland fire payments have been received. So there's nothing outstanding that we're waiting for right now, and I'm pleased to report that to you. So actually,
that come to for the season?
So after all expenditures, after paying out all payroll, we generated revenue about $244,000. Emergency incidents. It's been comparatively slow. We only had 15 emergencies last month.
That's good though, right?
It is. Yeah, it's a good thing when I come to you and say that we're not busy. The one thing I will say is that we've had a uptick in significant motor vehicle collisions. And our firefighters have been putting a tremendous amount of training into using the new Hurst Jaws of Life, the extrication equipment and tools that we use. Standardization, interoperability of our firefighters is really paid dividends in all of these incidents. And all three of the wrecks were, like I said, very catastrophic wrecks. And as of my knowledge right now, no fatalities. And that's a result of a lot of cooperation amongst all the responding emergency response agencies and the preparation and the having the right people in the right place and the tools and equipment and training and everything that goes along with it. And I'm pleased to report that we knock on wood, we've been doing very, very well in that, and I'm very pleased with our ability to continue to respond to those kind of wrecks and try to do the best we can for our public and the citizens and making sure that we're there for them when these kind of things happen. So. Investigations. There was one fire investigation for the lumber yard out here when we had that burn last year. That ended up being a very significant investigation. Yeah. Joe Sampson, our county fire investigator, put a significant amount of work into that. One of the things we're trying to do now is rather than have one fire investigator, we're trying to work collaboratively with the sheriff's office and do joint investigations. And we have specialized trained fire investigators with the fire department, but we've also got criminal investigators that, and I'm not saying all fires are crimes, don't misunderstand me, but when an arson does occur and it has to take the next step and move into the criminal investigation of means, motive, and opportunity, that we've got people with the sheriff's office that understand the big picture because they're working with us on the accidental fire investigations, that when it comes time that we need to do a serious investigation for potential arson, that we've got people that are trained and capable for that eventuality. So I'm very pleased to be able to say that, you know, the investigation department is going well. Joey's leading that up, and right now we've got four fire investigators that we're trying to call out every time they have an investigation to try to get multiple eyes on the investigation and try to, you know, prepare our investigators and just, you know, make sure that they get the on-the-job training that they need.
Terrific. Is there anything about that that you can share with us about that investigation?
Yeah. So the report's been finalized. The final report came back inconclusive. So in other words, it was an undetermined fire. Mm-hmm. We can tell you where it started, but within the general area of origin, there was multiple potential causes of ignition that we can't definitively exclude one. And not say that another thing could have potentially started that fire instead. So we can tell you where it started, and I don't have the report memorized at the top of my head, but he gave a general geographic location on you know, what was, you know, the area of most burn for the longest period of time, and you know, mass loss of combustible material, and, you know, within that general area of origin, he identified, if I remember right, four different potential causes of ignition, but because of the significant amount of damage that resulted from that fire, there was no smoking gun, so to speak, no definitive link that says, yes, this was the ignition point that led to that material first ignited. Hmm. So the report came back as being undetermined.
Okay.
Let's see here. So fire investigation, fire prevention. The position has been open here now for the last several months. Just recently, I was able to fill that position, and what I've decided to do with that position is working within the existing budget, try to divvy up the responsibilities of fire prevention. And one of the complaints that I've had from the two fire prevention personnel previous to this was that it's an overwhelming task, and, you know, I put a lot of responsibility on, you know, all the public education activities, community events, smoke detector installations, fireways activities, fuel reduction projects, and it's really, you know, in all reality, it's a full-time job for the amount of workload that I put on somebody, but I expect them to do it within part-time hours and then while they have another full-time job somewhere else, and it's onerous, to say the least. So what we're trying to do now is to help alleviate the burden of the amount of work that needs to be done from that job. We're going to try to spread it out over several different people. So we're going to give that a try and try to have a couple different people fulfill those obligations with specific areas of responsibility and expertise. And I'll report back to you and let you know how that's working out. But I hope to be able to, you know, continue to work within the existing line item, but just, you know, share that load a little bit so we don't overwhelm or burn out a single individual and you know, lose what could be a very productive firefighter overall because, you know, I put too much on them and expected too much. Training is continuing to go very, very well. Right now, we've still got 17 recruits in the academy, and I'm very pleased to say that, you know, we're three quarters of the way through the recruit academy. And generally speaking, by the time you get to that point, they've invested enough time in the program that I expect those 17 to successfully complete the academy and go on to become full fledged members of the organization. So I'm pleased. That's a good strong number, and I expect that to complete here this summer. It'll be June when we finish up the last of the Firefighter One Recruit Academy, and then immediately we'll move right into we've got some advanced auto extrication coming up this week there this summer. We've got some rural water supplies, some, you know, what do we do when there's not a hydrant, when we're, you know, several miles outside of town? How can we be more efficient in supplying water in those large fires? So we've got some training coming in for that. And then we've got an apparatus driver operator training coming up where we teach everybody how to pump the trucks, how to maintain the trucks, how to safely drive the trucks, defensive driving, everything goes along with that. And we've got all that scheduled on the books here real soon. So, you know, again, training is one of my primary considerations. It's a real big deal to me that we have our firefighters that are very capable and competent in the positions they perform. Training facility usage is ongoing. I'm very pleased to be able to have that facility down there. while I have that out, I guess one thing I'll talk to you about briefly, it's been a couple of years since I've brought this up, but several years ago we talked about the potential to run natural gas to the training facility. You know, right now we're on propane down there, and it's a significant cost to us to heat that facility. But above and beyond that, the props that we have set up down there really aren't plumbed, so we can't light them on fire and give realistic training scenarios and conditions to our firefighters. So one of the things we're trying to do is reach out to our industrial partners and ask for a little bit of help and say, you know, we really want to share this facility with anybody and everybody that needs to use it. Is there a way that you can do a little cost sharing with us and look to improve the training grounds for everybody's mutual benefit? So that discussion is ongoing right now, and we're in the process of meeting with the safety representatives and other interested parties from our industrial partners and asking to see if they want to work with us to try to improve the training grounds facilities and make it beneficial for everybody to get down there and get access to. So
where's the closest place you could hook on to natural gas?
It's actually right there at the edge of the pavement. So it's actually on 5th Street, but where it turns into the gravel and starts going past the sewer ponds and on down to the fire training facility, that would all have to be ran. And we do have a quote right now from the natural gas company about what their expected cost would be to run that, and we're seeing if we can share that cost among everybody.
How much is it?
Right now, I believe it's $13,000. And that was they told me that was a high estimate to run natural gas. And that's from the edge of the pavement to the edge of the property of the fire training facility, where we'd need to put in a meter and then go into the fire training facility and plumb to the props from there. And we're looking at seeing if we can do a little work sharing there to actually install the plumbing necessary for the props.
Would the town of Marbleton have any benefit from running natural gas down that way?
So that's the reason why I brought the idea to the Board of Commissioners. I expect it was probably 2.5 years ago when we first talked about it.
Right.
Initially, they were looking at providing emergency power supply for the sewer facilities that they have down there. And I think, if I recall, they wanted to have natural gas for their generator, if something along those lines. And then, you know, because of the cost associated with it, it wasn't economically feasible at the time.
Right.
I'd be more than happy to reach out to them and say, hey, look, we're trying to move forward with this. Is this something you would like to get involved with us with and further help to share that cost, so it's not overburdensome on any one organization or
yeah.
industrial partner.
I think there's nothing wrong with exploring cost sharing with as many people as you can, and just to see what comes up. Doesn't mean we're going to do it, but might end up being something that would be beneficial.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I'll do that.
Okay.
Sure to reach out to them. All right, so the training facility is doing very well. We're using it on a regular basis, and it's absolutely critical to the level of training that we provide for our firefighters. Health and safety is going very, very well right now. We've completed all the annual physicals, everything necessary to provide for the health and safety of our firefighters and try to take steps to make sure that our firefighters don't have a heart attack or suffer any ill effects from the arduous activities that we require of them. So I'm very, very happy with the results from that. Our health and safety officer, Mike Straw, works very, very diligently and is instrumental to ensuring that program is successful. Right now we're in the process of issuing wildland red cards to all of our firefighters, and that process usually takes about a month. You know, we've got over 100 firefighters, and we've got to make sure we've got all the documentation in place and certifications and issuance of all the training and everything that goes along with that, in addition to the requirements for physical health and the annual refresher training. And then finally, the cooperative services meeting. That's probably the biggest part of my job. I joke with people, but it seems like that's a lot. Every day I'm moving from meeting to meeting to meeting. And one of the things that I wanted to bring up to the Board of Commissioners and discuss briefly was that I'm very actively involved in the Wyoming Fire Chiefs Association, and that also the Wyoming County Fire Wardens Association, which is called the Rural Fire Board. And as part of my responsibilities involved with those statewide organizations, we've established a Wyoming Firefighters Cancer Support Network, and they've asked me to serve as the director of that organization. It's one thing that I feel very strongly about, and have taken a lot of initiative in, and as a result of that, the fire chiefs across the state have asked me to serve as the director of that board, and try to provide education and prevention efforts for firefighters across the entire state, support efforts whenever we can, whenever one of our firefighters is anywhere in the state is diagnosed with cancer. And then we provide nationwide, it's an organization that's all across the country. Every state has a local statewide, you know, chapter, if you want to call it that. One of the things they do on a national level is they do a lot of research and try to determine, you know, why are firefighters getting cancer. And right now, the national statistics say that firefighters at a rate of 3 to 1 are more likely to get various forms of specific types of cancer that are occupational related. And what they're doing is they're making the causal link between the carcinogens that firefighters, you know, see on a regular basis, you know, in the smoke and the particulate matter from, you know, when the burning of plastics and you know, modern synthetic materials, you know, burn in a house fire, they release a lot of carcinogens along with the smoke and everything else that goes along with it. And firefighters do a very good job of wearing their PPE and their SCBAs and trying to minimize, you know, the inhalation hazards, but there's still a lot of absorption hazards and other ways of routes of entry that the carcinogens can, you know, interact and get under our bodies. And so we're trying to take steps to minimize that exposure and prevent cancer to the best of our abilities, and then provide education. And that's really the biggest thing that I'll be doing as the director of this program is trying to you know, provide that education across the state.
What's the name of that again?
The Wyoming Firefighters Cancer Support Network. And I just wanted to let you know that's something I feel very strongly about. And you know, whenever I go to the Wyoming Fire Chiefs Association meeting, we'll usually have a subgroup meeting where we break out and talk about, you know, things that we can do to help support fellow firefighters within the state.
Chad, didn't the legislature that just passed had some piece of legislation that was beneficial to firemen with respect to cancer?
Yes, sir.
In terms of treatment earlier?
Yes, sir.
Provision?
Absolutely. And that's one of the things the Wyoming Fire Chiefs Association took leadership on is we felt very strongly that, you know, because of the increased incidence and risk associated with being a firefighter, whether you're a career firefighter or a volunteer firefighter, the statistics are the same, that we wanted to provide additional coverage for those firefighters when they are diagnosed with various forms of cancer. And there's, if I remember right, there's 6 specific forms of cancer that are occupational related, you know, for the exposure that firefighters have. And I, don't quote me on the 6, but there are a list of specific forms of cancer. And what the Fire Chiefs Association did was meet with the Wyoming legislature and say, we would very much appreciate having workers' comp coverage for those firefighters that, you know, as a result of volunteering for their community, have contracted these specific occupational-related cancers, and let's provide workers' comp coverage for those firefighters. And the Wyoming legislature did support and approve that, and we now are able to provide workers' comp coverage for those volunteer firefighters and career firefighters as well. Now, there's stipulations associated with that. You have to be a 5 years or 10 years. I think you have to be a member for 10 years. And it might be a difference between career and volunteers on that one, but you have to be a member of the organization for a set amount of time, and then during that set amount of time, you have to prove that you were an active member. You just weren't on the roster in name only. And so as a requirement of that, you have to prove that you responded to 25% of the emergency incidents and attended 40% of the trainings, and that there is a definitive link between, you know, you as a firefighter and being on the fire grounds where that exposure occurred. And in the past, before the legislation was approved and adopted, the onus was on the firefighter to prove the causal link between, you know, a specific incident and their presence at that incident and then the release of a carcinogen. And it was impossible to say, you know, 30 years ago I was on this incident and as a result I had cancer because of the long-term chronic effect of these carcinogens. So it just wasn't possible. But now as a result of this this legislation, the tables have been turned to some extent, and now there's always the opportunity for rebuttal. And if any time that you know, the county or the municipality or anybody that represents that firefighter thinks that it's not occupational related, it might be genetic, it might be you know, they might have been a smoker or whatever the case is, there's the opportunity for rebuttal. But now instead of the firefighter having to prove the direct causal link, now it's the responsibility of the rebutting agency to say no, that the firefighter was a smoker, or no, this specific type of cancer is not occupational related. But that was basically the summary of the legislative effort that was produced.
Well, congratulations on your role. Thank you for that.
Thank you for stepping
very
up.
Very worthy.
Speaks well for not only yourself but for Sutherland County.
Yeah. appreciate that. I was very pleased, and it's a really big deal to me that we were able to provide that protection and that coverage for our firefighters and make sure that they know that you know, if they do contract these occupational cancers as a result of volunteering for their organization, that we're doing the best that we can to take care of them and make sure that they're you know provided some level of protection and coverage.
Well, it's an honor for you to serve in that capacity.
Thank you. Cool. Okay. Well, I don't have anything further. Do you have any questions for me?
Volunteer hours. Nope. We do that.
Yeah. So we're tracking the volunteer hours. That's one thing we've been trying very hard to do. Is every time that we have a thank you for bringing that to my attention. Every time we do a community event, you know, whether it's a smoke detector installation or a parade or any number of different activities that we do, the volunteer firefighters, they're actually paid per call firefighters. So they receive a small remuneration for responding to emergency incidents and attending trainings. But that's all they receive a stipend for. So anything above and beyond that they do to volunteer to benefit their organization or their community, we try to track those hours and say, you know, thanks very much, but you know, let's make sure to keep an idea of what we do beyond the emergency response and the
this is beyond fighting fires.
Exactly, yes, sir. That's exactly the intent there. And so you know, we track those hours, and there's constantly something going on. There's always an activity in the community that we try to be involved with and provide, you know, the public education efforts that are necessary. So these are the hours that our volunteers you know give to the communities to try to help, you know, promote that message.
Excellent, Chad. Thank you. Okay. Anything further?
That's all.
Anything,
have.
Questions, comments for Chad?
No questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chad. Okay. Appreciate that.
Have a very good day.
Thank you, Ben. We're going to take a 5-minute break. I need to go make a contact real quick here, and then I'll be back. We're waiting for Shanda anyway, right?
Yep.
Set me up. I'm good.
No playing cards on
you. Yeah, I'm good to go.
Good guy.
Looks like he's been playing a while.
No, I just started.
He does talk really fast.
Just
get that on your computer.
Just this morning. And I didn't do it in private, so now I'm accused of doing it all the time. It's a calming thing in the evenings. Did you figure out where this? See, this is Thompson's Creek. Okay, Thompson's Creek has got to be. Right here.
Okay.
So this is the road.
We know where the little
pipe goes. This is that road. It comes like this.
Yeah.
And evidently they're talking about right in here, or is it right in here?
Yeah.
But there's no fence. I know that it's here. Because this gets to Pam's house down there.
Right. Right.
Yes, she was.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
She came into the lens when I was talking to her, and I asked her that she should, and Dorian did also, that said she should. She's got
I got a story I got to tell you guys. So I left to go down to First Neighbors, who are doing Cinderella.
Oh, yeah.
My granddaughter just